We have a thing in radio called air miles. And so the longer you're on radio for, the more air miles you have. And when I was trying to come through, they were like, you need to get your air miles up. So I was like, I'm not going to get my air miles up. I've only got a show that's, you know, once a week on Represent. And then just out of nowhere, Represent were like, oh, we're launching a drive time show. We want you to be the drive time presenter. We'll pay for your travel. So it's 5 days a week. And in my head, I was like, okay, cool. This is amazing. This is what I've been thinking, universe. This is what I've been asking for. So 5 days a week, 2 hours a day, times that by, you know, 2 hours a day, that's 10 hours a week, times that by a month, times that by a year. If I do that a year, that's how many radio miles, air miles are there? And I was like, that's what's going to get me to where I need to get to.
Welcome to The Power Hour, the weekly podcast that will motivate you to pursue your passion and to achieve success. I'm Adrienne Herbert, international speaker, fitness coach, Adidas global ambassador and entrepreneur. Each week, I'll be talking to today's leading coaches, creatives, change makers and innovators to find out their daily habits, morning routines and rules to live by. The Power Hour is all about taking just 1 hour each day to help you improve your life and unlock your full potential. Whether you want to build a business, write a book, run a marathon, or maybe you're just looking for a spark of inspiration, the Power Hour is going to help you get there faster. Welcome back to the Power Hour podcast. Today's guest is one of the UK's leading international DJs and broadcasters who has played at Sona, Eldorado, Lovebox, Ibiza Rocks and many, many more, as well as hosting a weekly show on BBC Radio 1 Extra. She uses her platform to showcase new talent, and earlier this year she launched her brand new record label, Future Bounce. Not only that, she's also created DIY Generation to shine a spotlight on amazing young people who are building and owning their own boss careers, highlighting women and people of colour. Welcome to the studio, Jams Supernova!
Thank you. Why am I blushing?
The intro.
I suddenly felt really hot.
Yeah.
I just wanted to like laugh and run.
No, the intro is the best bit. Yeah. I love it. And people often have that reaction. They're like, is that me?
Yeah.
Making me sweat. Thank you for coming in today. I really, really appreciate having you here. And I've just been looking forward to it all week.
Yeah. I was listening to the Poppy one on the way over.
Yeah.
I feel ready and primed and pumped. Yeah.
I love that episode. I kind of felt like I wasn't really remembering that other people were going to hear that conversation. I was just staring at her.
Yeah, she's really charming, isn't she?
Yeah. Amazing. Okay, so I guess to kick it off, I would love, well, for you to start, really, for anyone listening who might not know much about your journey so far, could you talk us through like how you got started in the industry and who influenced you the most along the way?
Okay, so I got started in the industry, I'd probably say, when I left college. So I went to the Brit School and it was kind of there that really like solidified what I wanted to do. I kind of, in school, knew I wanted to do something around music, but couldn't play an instrument or sing, you know, to that level. And was never going to be able to, you know, the talent wasn't there basically. But I was the person like built, like always downloading music, burning CDs and things like that. And I thought, okay, I watched a lot of MTV Bass and MTV and, you know, T4, and I'll be a TV presenter. That's what I want to do. So I was like, I'll go to the Brit School, I'll do media because I'm going to meet loads of people there, and then that's how it's going to happen. And then when I went to the Brit School, they had a radio studio. And I was like, damn, I never really thought of radio. And I listen to radio all the time. It's like in our family, you get in the car, you put the radio on, you come home, you put the radio on. And then I was like, I never really thought of that. Okay, radio, this feels much better than like TV presenting. It feels like it's got more substance. And then I felt like at the time, TV was going through this weird thing where everything was moving to YouTube, but YouTube wasn't like that powerful then. Mm-hmm. But there were, you know, if you weren't Dermot O'Leary, there was no gigs. And they'd close T4 and things like that. So radio was kind of like, that's what I'm going to do. So I went, like, you know, focused on it all the way through college.
What years were you at Brit School?
So I was there 2008 and to 2010.
Right. For anyone who doesn't know, like the Brit School, it's kind of, well, I mean, it's amazing, but they churn out. Like you look at the list of people, and people who always say they went to Brit School, they're like, yeah, I was there with, you know, Adele and, you know, all these, like Amy Winehouse, like all these people, like amazing British talent.
But no, my year was a bit dud.
Well, no, they had you jobs.
We've got loads of people behind the scenes. That's what we've been stronger. But my year, like, we didn't have SoundCloud like that. We didn't have the internet like that. And I think the years before, they had more sort of industry interest, I guess. So we did have the Amy's. Katie B was in the year above me. That's my claim to fame. I'm owning her.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it was 2007, sorry, to 2009. Those were the years. And then I left. I was like, I ain't going uni. I was like, I know everything. I know it all. And I don't want to study for, you know, another year. I'm raring to go. So I just spent like a year doing work experience, and I'd work in, as a teaching assistant in schools, either sort of on agency, or I was working in my mom's school sometimes. And then in the holidays, I would do work experience. Mm-hmm. And then I'd just jump around. I'd be like, you know, oh, who do you know? Like, because everyone's friends with everyone.
Yep.
And then they'd be like, oh, my friend works at MTV. Okay, cool. So then I'd line it up for the next school holiday. And then I did that. And then the final work placement was the BBC. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to be on One Extra. That's all I knew from, like, you know, 17 years old. I wanted to be on One Extra. And I'd applied like 3 times to get an internship and didn't hear anything back. And I thought, I'll try just one more time. I'm going to try it. And then I got an interview. And during that time, I was part of like a presenting competition with Nokia. So I really thought, I was like, actually, I don't even need this anymore. I'm going to be big.
Got it.
Yeah, so I walked into the interview and I was like, I couldn't make the first date because I'd been in LA. I was like 19, I really thought.
Was that true?
Yeah, it was.
Okay, good.
Yeah. It was genuinely true. I had been in LA on a competition, but, you know, they didn't need to know the ins and outs.
You're like, I'm booked and busy, babes.
I'm booked and busy, but I'll make it next week. And then I came in, I was like, yeah, I was so confident in myself. And then I got the internship.
Amazing.
And never left, and now I was 19.
There's two parts of that I love. One is the persistence. So you're saying, you know, you'd applied 3 times and heard nothing back, and you still applied again, which I think, you know, often people say, like, oh, I've tried that. I've tried that. It's like, how many times did you try? Maybe you just got to try once more. And also I love, like you said, the confidence shift that you had once you kind of went in, you know, and people get a feeling when they're with people that are confident. And it's difficult because it's not something you can just say to someone, okay, be confident now.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that when you had that energy and people felt that, you know, you secured that internship.
And looking back, I mean, maybe I wasn't like, looking back, I can feel that confident. I can see that confident person. Maybe I wasn't necessarily like knowing that I was giving that off. But looking back, I'm like, you thought you had this, you know?
Yeah.
And I think in kind of looking at the rest of my career, I guess there have been times when I thought I had it and I haven't had it, and you get the knocks. Or there have been times when I think the most times I find myself most successful is when I don't care if I have it. And I know that sounds bizarre to say.
No.
It's like, if I don't care if I get it either way, because I know what I'm doing.
There's no pressure on that.
Yeah. And that's when I tend to have the leaps in my career. But the persistence, again, was sort of, again, coming through when I was at One Extra working behind the scenes. So I was an intern and I was a producer, and I was there 5 years in production. But I thought in my head, well, I get there at 19. By the time I'm 21, they're going to see the talent that I am. Then they're going to give me a show. And then, 5 years later, every year they said no. They were like, no, you're not good enough. No, no one knows who you are. Okay, you're getting good now, but still nobody knows you. Okay, now we can hear you're getting good because I was doing radio outside on a community level. But, you know, we're just not what we're looking for right now. Okay, now you're good and you have a little bit of a profile, but this person has been waiting a little bit longer. And it was just like 5 years of no, no, no. And then, you know, it got to the point where I was kind of, I was producing Toddler T on Radio 1, and I was the youngest producer, and I was loving that because we could just come up with any idea. I'd be like, right, should we make a hip-hop documentary tonight? Like, on air. And he'd be like, yeah, let's do it. And then he would bring me out to do gigs with him. We got to go to Jamaica and things like that. And then I had a good show on Represent, and that was kind of building and flying. And sound. I thought I was, you know, made it on SoundCloud. I was famous on SoundCloud. And then I thought, you know what? I don't even need BBC. Like, I don't even need a show on there. Maybe this is the way forward. I could be happy doing all these things forever. And then they gave me the show.
Yeah, you see, again, persistence. And that's not like, you know, 5 years. It's a long time.
It's a long time.
And as you said about the rejection, I think it's often when you're in an environment where you feel like other people are getting it and you're not, that's hard.
And your friends.
Yeah, so I'm saying that's hard to keep going and being like, you know, okay, cool, this person's got it, I didn't get it, this person's got it. And, you know, a lot of people, I think, then they start to build the resentment, the bitterness. It's like, you know, that, oh, it's because of this, oh, it's because of that.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, there can be so many nuanced, you know, reasons, political, there's so many things that go on but you know, you stuck that out and obviously you know, the reward, the fruit, you got the show.
Yeah, and I loved, you know, who really kind of, I guess, taught me a lot about not being resentful, not being bitter, or how to have grace, I think, would be the best thing. Because there have been times you get resentful. But I've got good friends. They'll be like, okay, you've had your time now. Now move on. You know, you've been moaning for 2 weeks. Now might be mindful of what you say, you know. And then people will check you. But it was actually Clara Amfo. So one of the times she got the show. And then I had to work on the show. And then after I was producing the show, and she pulled me to the side. She was like, you know, I know that you went for this show, and I just want to say your time is coming. And I was like, oh, wow. I felt like, oh, wow. I was like, oh, wow. You didn't have to say that, or even to acknowledge that she could have been, you know.
That's nice.
She could have taken me off the show. I don't want her working there, you know.
Yeah, no, that's nice. And it's nice when you, I guess, working with people like that makes a difference for sure. So I've heard a little bit about, you know, obviously the school and I guess kind of your influence there. But did you have an influence before that? So like in your childhood, did you have anyone in your family? Was there anyone in music? Was there anyone that kind of made you, I guess, or encouraged you to kind of pursue that, the Brit School and that kind of career?
Well, both my parents were creative. They were actors. Mm-hmm. That's how they met. They met at drama school when they're 17. And then my mom got pregnant like a year after, and then had me at 21. And then she, you know, he was acting, and then she moved to London to go to drama school because they were living in Birmingham. Mm-hmm. So they were always very sort of creative people. And I think, you know, maybe had they not have kids when they did, they would have gone on to do, you know, amazing things in that field. So they were, yes, yeah, so that's everything was music based, everything was performance based, everything was, you know, I don't know, like eccentric and creative, and just, you know, sometimes we'd be drawing, sometimes we'd be singing, sometimes we'll be rolling around acting, you know, and there's sort of no boundaries. And then even with like my uncles and my aunts, and then we're all kind of, now we're all similar ages, which is really weird. Yeah. Like when you think about it, like my uncle's like 40, you know, my aunt's, you know, 40, my mom's 50, I'm 29 now. So we're all very like close in. But all we do listen to music. They'll come round, put music on, smoke, drink, you know. Oh, you got the new Eminem? I'll bring it round, let's tape it. Or you got the new Alicia Keys? Okay, let's swap it because I've got this. And then my granddad, very much into music. He played in a band when he was, you know, before I was even born, or before my mom was even born. So I think it's just been so like in our DNA.
Yeah, you had that influence.
Yeah, and even now we have family gatherings, and eventually it will turn into who's got the orcs, you know.
I love that though, and I guess, yeah, it's always been there for you, you know, from day dot. And I know that you are incredibly passionate about young people and about supporting, you know, the next generation of artists and DJs. I heard you say in an interview when you started your internship at BBC that you mentioned that you did all the jobs that you were asked to do. And so, you know, obviously you've just described as well since then, you know, that continuation of hard work and graft to kind of, you know, craftsmanship essentially. So where do you think that work ethic that you have has come from?
I'm not really sure, to be honest. I think I've always worked, like even before, like I've always had a job. Like I always wanted to make money. And not that money's not my driving force, but the independence of money is what that can give me. You know, not necessarily the value of money, having money to go shopping, but to be like, I can do this and I can do that, and that's what I want to do with it. So like I did a paper round at 13, you know, like the new shopper. You could get the new shopper, you could get them to deliver to your house, you pull the supplements in, you do that. Me and my brother was going to split it. We just dumped them behind the train station. But I did do I was the paper girl, you know. Then I worked in a theatre at 15. I worked 7 days a week from 17. I always worked 7 days a week. I worked in an after school club. So I definitely think that work ethic came from there. And then in terms of, I guess, applying that when I got to the BBC, I think it was just kind of, I'd read so much online about like how to make yourself invaluable. Like I'd been to so many seminars and so many, you know, workshops and things like that I just was like, you know, it's a game. Not a game, but it is, I guess it is a game. And I remember Angelica Bell, actually, I went to one conference that she was doing, and she was like, she said something that I found really important. She was like, if you're the intern and you've been asked to make tea, make the tea before we start. Don't do everything but the job that's being asked of you, like trying to talk to me and trying to get me to watch your show reel or da 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 da. Because people remember you. If you can do the jobs that you've been given at task, people will give you the time to then, you know, talk to you about you. And that definitely stuck with me. So I would never like in the studio, oh, I've been doing this, or what do you think about that? You know, it was all about giving to the presenter your full time. And then if you said, oh, can we have a coffee afterwards? They'd be more than happy to, because they can see that you're kind of working for them. It's kind of like a you know, everyone's got to give to receive, you know. And I think that definitely, I think, did me well, because it gave me a lot of, a lot of good friends and people that I admire that were willing to vouch for me when the time came.
Amazing. I really hope that I just hope so many people hear this. You know, the whole everything you're saying then about how many different jobs, you know, work. It's work. Yeah. That's essentially what it is. Yeah. It's hard work. And I think often now I see a lot of stuff about, you know, shortcut this and cut corners that, fast track, how can you, you know, hacks, tips. And it's like people want to avoid the hard work,
yeah.
But nothing can replace it.
And people always say, when you say to someone, oh, that sounds like a lot of work. You know, I tell you what sounds like a lot of work. I was watching Top Boy. That looks like a lot of work for not a lot of game. Mm-hmm. Like that to me feels like a lot of work. But actual, you know, I don't know what else I'll be doing. I've got that kind of mind frame that if I'm not busy or I'm not doing stuff, then my brain starts thinking, and then I think I can easily get depressed or get caught up on things that wouldn't normally I would get upset by. Mm. But even my boyfriend, he went away for like about a month to do some music, and there was no one to tell me to go to bed. So I'd just be like, 1 a.m., 2
working,
a.m.,
working.
I've had an idea, you know, and I definitely kind of now need a balance.
Okay. But, you know, even sitting here and listening to you speak, you know, you've got that energy, and I feel that too. Like, I'm an energetic person, so I can relate. You do have to find the balance, but also I think if it's good and it feels good and you're in something, then I guess, you know, like I said, you got that energy.
Yeah.
And you mentioned about going to some seminars and courses. And I know that you've talked before about being about still learning. And you said in a Refinery 29 interview, you're like, I'm still learning. And that is essential for longevity in the industry. I personally am obsessed with the idea of lifelong learning and skill acquisition. Trust me, I'm always, you know, like similar, looking at, you know, talks and workshops and downloadable things. And, you know, I always kind of think essentially every person who I look up to or inspires me or who's high performing or leading in their field is still learning and is still talking about the importance of learning. So can you give the listeners, can you give us some advice about when it comes to learning, what are some things that people could do and how do you stay, well, two things, motivated and disciplined? Because I think initially it's like, oh, I want to do this. But then, like you said, once you realise how much work it is, how do you stay disciplined to keep learning?
I guess the first thing would be to break it down into tiny chunks. And I think even when it comes to, I guess, like learning and learning your craft, I think it's accepting that it's not going to be overnight. This is something that's going to be, you know, long-winded and it's going to carry on. But if you kind of break it down into chunks, I think that makes it a lot easier. And I really think it's important to learn from others. I think there's no harm in watching your favourite person. You know, the people that I think that are great at learning, they're watching other people. So, where, you know, for me, it's being in the DJ booth when someone that I admire is playing. Actually, anyone in the DJ booth, they don't have to be someone that I admire. I love watching other people DJ. I'm like, oh, they did that? Okay, I'm going to try that when I go home.
Yeah.
You know, listening to other people on the radio. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, I want to be on radio. Okay, what do you listen to? I don't listen to radio. So, but people do. You'd be surprised. And how can you, you know, learn if you don't even listen, or you're not even trying to engage with the task that you want to be? You want to be a presenter, then watch other presenters. You want to make your own podcast, listen to other podcasts. I think that's definitely a tip. I'm trying to think what else. I mean, the internet is there. Because I think I'm more of a, I guess, I learn from doing a lot of it. So I want you to teach me the beginning bits, and now let me go on my own. And I'm a solitary learner. I learn best on my own. So for me, learning is being 5 hours in a DJ room on my own with no phone.
Mm,
and I can do that a lot. And even when I first started learning how to DJ, I had the decks at home. And every night I came home, I just put them on and just go for hours and hours and hours. And I was only mixing the same two songs. You know,
repetition.
I was like, I really need to move on.
Like, got this one.
Yeah,
I'm ready.
Yeah, I'm ready. I can do a set now. Oh, now, damn, I've got to mix other genres. You know, that was a whole nother learning curve. So yeah, I say break it down into small chunks. I would say watch and learn from others. And then I guess in terms of the discipline,
do you think because, you know, you wanted to do that, so obviously you had like, you had the desire and the will, there was no one saying to you, you know what, you need to do 4 hours of practice today, 4 hours of this. Do you know what I mean? Do you think it's different when it's like, it's your passion? You want to be disciplined because you want to do it.
Yeah, I definitely think you have to want to do it, and you have to want it. And I do wonder how much people really want things. What are you willing to do? You know, how far are you willing to go?
Mm-hmm.
to get it. I do wonder, because there are people that I can smell it when people want it. Mm. You know it. You're like, okay, I'll see you in 10 years. You know,
yep.
You just know it. And then you know when people will give you any excuse to not do it as well. And it's not that they don't want it. They just don't want it that badly at that time, or they don't believe that they can have it, you know? Mm. So I definitely think like the discipline side of things, I think comes from sports, to be honest. I think playing football, I played football for years and up until I was 16. And I think that's what that discipline, you it's so, when you look at like sports and working out, it's so easy to see the results of work, isn't it? How much mm-hmm. work you put in, and then the result of what that gives you. Mm-hmm. The more you practice, the better you'll be. The longer you run, the more fit you'll be. It's very easy to see like the direct correlation. But I think in sort of the more creative things, we need the hard work is the consistency. And if you do something, the same thing, or you keep on being consistent for a year, you will see the results. Mm-hmm. And I think the discipline you have to have the belief to discipline yourself.
Yes. I'll hear it, people. Because everyone if regular listeners of this podcast will know that I'm into sport, I'm into fitness, I'm a runner, and I often relate things back to that all the time. Yeah. But it's like, it is, as you said, such a clear, you know, action and result. And, you know, you kind of, when I always say to people, put the miles in. Mm. And yes, I'm talking about running, but it applies to everything, you know. Yeah. It applies to any area of your life. As you said, consistency, putting the miles in, it does pay off.
Yeah, we have a thing in radio called air miles. And so the longer you're on radio for, the more air miles you have. And when I was trying to come through, they were like, you need to get your air miles up. So I was like, I'm not going to get my air miles up. I've only got a show that's, once a week on Represent. And then just out of nowhere, Represent were like, oh, we're launching a drive time show. We want you to be the drive time presenter. We'll pay for your travel. So it's 5 days a week. In my head, I was like, okay, cool. This is amazing. This is what I've been thinking, universe. This is what I've been asking for. So 5 days a week, 2 hours a day, times that by, 2 hours a day, that's 10 hours a week, times that by a month, times that by a year. If I do that a year, that's how many radio miles, air miles are there? And I was like, that's what's going to get me to where I need to get to.
Awesome. Okay, so I'd like to talk to you now about opportunities and about access to the industry. So last year, the UK Music Diversity Report released all the stats and the statistic that only 18% of the UK music industry workforce is BAME. That's increased by 2% from the year before when it was only 16. So it is increasing slowly. But Jams, you've worked in the industry, you know, you've done all of these things that we're hearing about. Do you see that change happening? And what do you think needs to happen to give more access and more opportunity to people of colour and of ethnic minority?
I think I'm in a bubble. I think being at One Extra, I think that definitely makes you think that, hold on, not only is it diverse ethnically, but we have many senior females.
Okay.
So I think that kind of maybe skewered the way I saw things. And it wasn't until I went to work in a record label that I was like, oh, I'm the only black person on this team. Mm. And I'm the only female. I was like, oh, wow. I was really shocked.
Okay.
And then you start to realise like the dynamics and the nuances of what that brings. And I do, and that record label is really definitely trying to change. And I've been there for a couple of years and it's definitely shifting. The office looks completely different to how it looked when I first walked in there 3 years ago. But I think I'm in a skewered bubble. Mm. But the problem that I think is not necessarily the access, because I think that there's a lot of amazing people coming through. I think that you'd be stupid to run a company now and not understand the need to have diverse voices working for you. It brings you more money. It brings you more audiences. You know, it's stupid to ignore it. But what I feel we have a problem is that it's not filtering to the top.
Yeah.
So we have diversity on this really sort of like
outward facing
grassroots level, but up the top is not diverse at all. Mm. And we've got a many years and decades to go until we start to see the top being reflected. We've just got a new big boss at BBC, Lorna Clark, and she's a black woman. Came through working on One Extra, used to do Kiss, went to Radio 2, like just bam, 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 worked her way up. And like, she's like, wow, like, you know, praise be. she's there. But we need more Lornas, I think. I think that's what's going to incite faster change.
Yeah, for sure. And it's interesting, you know, like you said, everyone, outwardly facing, I think a lot of industries and a lot of brands and a lot of corporations are outwardly facing, you know, people are like, it's changed so much, you know, look, there's this, there's, you know, women of color, there's disability, there's, yeah, but it's, as you said, it's very outward facing. And I personally feel like as soon as you go back maybe one step, maybe two, maybe three,
it starts to change,
and it's a stark contrast. And I feel like that those, you know, top tiers or whatever, that's where the decisions happen. That's where, you know, if it doesn't trickle down from there, then it's kind of irrelevant, really, what we see at the front.
And I think my biggest worry now when I sort of deep it, and when I was doing DIY Generation, when I was doing the feature, I started to realise that now I can find so many diverse, amazing ethnic creatives. Now it's about class. And that's where I feel that we haven't even touched the sides on, because there are many people who are Asian, Black, Chinese, who are now middle class and educated.
Yep.
And so will their children be. You know, if you think about all the people that are in the industry now, in the next 15 years, even they have kids, it's going to, you know.
Yeah.
But what about the people that can't afford to do work experience?
Yeah.
What about the people that are in a school that doesn't, you know, that doesn't allow for them to see success? You know, not because it's not around them. And that's what I think is worrying.
Yeah, bridging the gap between the underprivileged. And I think, I know that within education, there's a lot of kind of spotlight on that right now, and saying, you know, that gap, you know, because it reflects obviously quite clearly in things like attendance, in success, in grades. I guess I don't really know how it's gonna change in a creative industry perspective.
Yeah.
Things like internships, and I guess maybe programs that kind of are specific and reach out. You know what I mean? It's gonna be a two-way thing, right?
Yeah, I definitely think you have to reach out. I think people, you have to be on the ground, and you're gonna have to go into these schools, and you're gonna have to, you know, pump more money into them, and have like a direct pipe that comes from those areas into the industry.
Yeah, because I think often the responsibility is put the other way. So it's kind of like, well, you go out and you find it. You know what I mean? So it's like someone can listen to someone like yourself and be like, you know, look, as I've said, you know, you've worked so hard. So it kind of puts sometimes the responsibility on the individual to say, go out and find this, do this, hustle, work harder. But actually, as you said, it's not always even an option to people. They don't even know certain things, paths, you know, that they exist.
Or that it could be for them. And you talk about discipline, but what if you can't afford to turn your electric on? It's easy to be disciplined when your electric's on. It's easy to put your mind on other things. It's not so easy when you can't even afford the basics, you know?
Yeah,
you've got to leave home early. You know, there's so many different factors, and I think we definitely need to do more work around that.
Yeah, definitely. Lots of barriers to overcome. Mm. So can you tell us all about DIY Generation? Yeah. Who is it for, and how can people get involved?
Yeah, so basically, well, we're kind of like in a transition. So I started it on the BBC, and it was a feature where we speak to young creatives and entrepreneurs about their journey and their path. And I started it because I had a music show on BBC and I had a daytime show on there. And they were like, we're one of our presenters is not on anymore. We're missing a kind of like feminine fashion edge. I was like, okay, you ain't going to get that with me. I was like, but I can bring you lifestyle. So I come up with this feature. I initially wanted it to be a documentary, but no one took it at the time. This is like, 5-6 years ago. And we did make a documentary in the end, so we got there. So we rolled it out as a sort of small segment that went out 10 minutes on a Sunday, every Sunday for 3 years. And then now I've come off weekends on One Extra, and I kind of, want to find a new home for it, and I want to make it a podcast. Mm-hmm. I want to write a book.
Amazing,
you know?
Yes.
Yeah, do you know what? If anything, taking it off air was the best thing I could have done, because I actually said to them for so long, give me a podcast. I can make, you've launched your new app, let me make it a podcast. And they were like, it's like, you know when something's underneath someone's nose, they're like,
could do that.
But does it work in a podcast format?
You're like, it's ready, it's packaged, ready to go.
I'm actually making a podcast and shoving it into radio. It's not meant to be on radio, it's meant to be a podcast. So I was just like, you know what, if anything, actually I'm really glad that they didn't bite when they did. Because now I can change the name slightly. I'm calling it Jam Supernova's DIY Handbook.
Amazing. Yeah. Is this an exclusive? I feel like I'm getting the lowdown.
I haven't
this
said
is
this
an
publicly.
Exclusive.
Yeah,
amazing. Congratulations.
Yeah. So now I've got to do it, definitely.
Yeah.
Yes, 2020. Watch this space. And I want to do a sort of podcast series, slightly tweak the format a little bit, and it will be about lessons learned and the sort of, you know, stages of success, but the lessons that you learn along the way, and then hopefully a book. Yeah, that's my aim.
Yeah, well, I'm sure. I can't wait to have a physical copy in
Thank
my
you.
Hand. And also 3 years that you did that, you know, you must have gained so much insight and heard some, some familiarities between them, but also some, yeah, just like amazing things to draw upon for the book.
Yeah, 100%. Like speaking to so many people and like even seeing what they've gone on to do now, it's like my little black book of creatives is extensive. You're like, okay, you want a photographer? I've got a photographer for you. You want a da-da-da? You know.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm nodding along. Oh, I'm excited for you.
Thank you.
Cool. And so I'm going to talk to you about the Power Hour. This is the Power Hour podcast. And on this show, I mean, I love to hear about how and why people do what they do, what they're passionate about. And I get inspired by what gets people out of bed in the morning, basically. I'm an early bird. People who listen to the show know I'm an early riser. But Jams, you are a DJ, a broadcaster. Mm. You work into the early hours of the morning. So firstly, how do you switch off if you're working, you know, super late into the morning? And what time do you go to bed and what time do you wake up?
I'm not a morning person.
Okay.
And I don't think I'll actually... Was you a morning person before you had a child?
Was I... You know what? Not as early as now. Like now I'm like a 5:30 every day. I know, but I don't know. I'm trying to think now. Before I had you, it feels like such a long time ago. My son is 8 years old, so I don't really remember a life
years
before.
Of a human alarm clock.
Yeah. But I've always had energy in the morning. I've never been the person who's like, oh no, like I can't get out of bed or give me coffee. I always, once I'm up, I'm up. Yeah. I'm going.
I'm a snoozer.
Really?
I snooze and snooze. I'd set 10 alarms. I sleep very deeply as well.
Okay.
I'm not an early riser at all, and I do go to bed quite late. So I probably go to bed around, I go to bed around 2 a.m. But this year I've been trying. I read somewhere that successful people, you know, have routine, and especially in the
structure.
Yeah. And I don't really have much routine. My routine is dependent on what's in my diary. And before, I used to wake up according to what the first thing was in the diary. Okay, so like before, I would have woken up, I'm meant to be here at 12. Okay, I'm going to get up at 10:30. Because that'll give me enough time to get ready and get on the train. Like, that's how I've got to be somewhere at 1, or I'll get up at 11, you know. And I'm really trying to, this year, I've been really trying to have some consistency of when I wake up. So I try and wake up at 8:30. Mm-hmm. I get out of bed normally 9:30. Yeah. So that's how it works.
An hour of snooze.
Yeah, snooze, phone.
Chill.
Lying, screaming. Yeah, leave me alone. You know, have a coffee, have some breakfast. But breakfast is really important now for me. I never used to have breakfast either.
Okay.
And this year I was like, no, I need to have breakfast first thing in the morning. That's been really helpful. But what gets me out of bed, I think, is just that I love what I do. Like, my life is really fun.
Yeah.
But I've purposely built that life. I said to myself, I want a career that is fun. I want everything I do to be fun. I don't want nothing to be, you know, too serious or too heavy. And I think that's what genuinely gets me up, because there's nothing in my diary that's like, ugh. Even the mundane stuff, the admin side of things, I know that it's the flip side to the, because the fun's on the other side of it.
Yes.
So that's what I think really gets me out of bed. But yeah, routine, I think, is something that I massively was like against before, because I've always been a freelancer. So even when I worked for the BBC behind the scenes, I was freelancing, but I'd work like 7 days. It was all unorthodox times, but I liked that because I was picking and choosing. So when I got my show, I was like, well, now I've gone from working 7 days a week to working, having one show a week. What do I do? You know, and for the first couple of months, I just was like in bed till 3 every day, which is like ridiculous. It's not sustainable. And then my friend was like, right, you need to like set some things in place. But I think what gives me structure now is putting the gym in.
I was just about to ask you that. When you said you started to have, I was thinking, here we go. So she's getting up at 8:30 now.
Yeah.
She's added breakfast in now.
Yeah.
I was thinking, next one I'm going to hit you with is movement. I was like, does she have, you know, tell us, you hit the gym now?
Yeah, but not necessarily always in the morning.
Okay.
So I will be like, right, I got a personal trainer on a Monday. She's been a real sort of godsend. And then this is the longest that I've been consistent in the gym. Before, I used to be like 3 months, bam, 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 fall off in summer. Oh, September. be on it for a month, that's my birthday, that's long, and then it's Christmas, and then January, bam, 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 you know, yeah. And that was the cycle. But this is the longest that I have consistently worked out for, mm-hmm. and I think it's having her. So we meet on a Monday, train for an hour, and then I try and fit in three other sessions.
Amazing. And so now that you know, that all or nothing thing that you described is most people's experience mm-hmm. of gym or exercise or running. They kind of yo-yo between, as you said, like, I'm on it for 2 weeks, then I'm off, then I'm mm-hmm. on. So now that you've been consistent, how has it, have you felt an impact, a change?
Yeah, just for my mind, I think, definitely have had less anxiety, definitely like less down moments, because as creators we can be like, we're so
you can get melancholy
yeah. And then all the other one day we're like, we're the best, everyone love us, and then we're like, everyone hates us, you know, it can really sort of yo-yo. But the yo-yo in this year has been less intense, I would say, and I've been able to get back out of it quicker, and I think that's through working out mm-hmm. and switching off. You said, like, when do you switch off? And I think the gym, I don't really have my phone with me if I'm doing a class, or if I do it, or it gives me time to like zone, and I start doing weights, and I never would have touched the weights area ever. Like, I would have been like, oh, I don't want to get hench, or I just don't even know how they work.
Yeah.
And now my personal best is like deadlifting 93 kilos.
Come on.
I know.
Yes.
I'm like, wow, I can like lift myself and more.
Yes.
10 times.
Which is important if you fall in a hole. Yeah. I keep telling people this. They always laugh. I'm like, you know that actually it's this health, basic health and safety, guys. You need to be able to save yourself.
To save your own self, yeah.
Yeah, if people can't lift your own body weight.
Yeah, it's true. I thought of it like that. Yeah. Well, now I can. Yeah.
You can.
But definitely I just think that's been so helpful. And obviously, you know, I guess with the body side of things, I haven't really like, I've started off as a sort of, I started off as a vanity project.
Really?
Yeah, because I was like, oh, I put on a bit of weight, and that's where I got the trainer. But then it's kind of made me more in tune with my body. So like we have weigh-ins, but it's not about the weight, but it's about the choices that I've made. Mm. If that makes any sense. So like the first three months, I'd lost quite a bit of weight, and then I was like, and then I was like back into my old ways again.
Party time.
Yeah, basically. And then 3 months later, I'd put it back on and more. And it wasn't like necessarily like about the weight. It was about that I hadn't, even though I'm working out, I'm undoing a lot of it with the food choices and drink choices that I make. So that's been helpful, I think, and keeping on track.
Mm. Maybe accountability too, you know, like you said, having the trainer and sounds like you have like, you know, you enjoy training with her, you have a good relationship with her.
I love her, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that makes a big difference. You know, I used to train a lot of clients one-to-one, not so much anymore, but, you know, if you've got a good relationship with someone, you feel like you're almost like you're in it together and you want to do it with them, and you know what I mean? I definitely think for a lot of people, even after a like, I shouldn't say this as a trainer, but after a while I was like, you don't need me anymore.
Yeah.
Like, you know what you could do. Like, I can give you the program. But they're like, no, I still need you.
And yeah,
they
need
the accountability.
Yeah. And now I've got a life coach as well. Yeah. So like now I feel like this year I was like, you know, I'm turning 29. I'm going to like real life adulthood.
She's grown.
There's growth here. Yeah. So I got a life coach. Because I tried therapy and that didn't, I mean, I wouldn't rule out therapy, and I probably will go back to therapy. But at that in that moment of time, I don't really care about the past.
Yeah.
At that moment, I was more focused
looking forwards.
Yeah. Yep. And so there wasn't, I didn't really feel like I could really connect with her. Maybe I had the wrong therapist. I will definitely try again. Mm. But now I've had a life coach, which I've been starting this year. I've had her since March. She has helped a lot of routine.
Yeah.
Because she'll be like, she likes to know what the week looks like. And then we'll come up with, okay, but this, now you're adding this into the mix. What will your week look like? And she'll be like to me, so when's your rest day? I'll be like, what do you mean? I was like, oh, there's a morning here. She was like, no, but when's your rest day? Like, you know.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, so she's been really cool. And again, the accountability, and I think the sort of like, again, getting you up in the morning because you know you've got such an extensive list to do, but it feels manageable because she's made it feel manageable. And I have a manager and we, you know, do a lot of that stuff. But it's nice to have someone that's completely removed.
Yeah,
she's not nothing to do with monetary, you know, or anything like that. Or. Yeah. She's completely separate.
Mm, no, it sounds great. And I think, you know, it's amazing if you can have those things, but even without those things, you know, that thing between being creative and then having structure, I think sometimes people think that they're two separate things they can't combine.
Yeah.
But actually, I think it's essential. You know, if you look at your whole week, as you said, she wants to see the whole week because that's like, you know, there's 168 hours in a week and it's like, well, how are you spending that time? And I think sometimes an exercise that I found super useful was to have like that sounds so lame, but it was like almost like a colour coordination. So it's like, if say for example, if green is rest and then white is, I don't know, work, and then red is I don't know, this is a bad example, but like orange is fun, yeah. Okay? You can soon start to see what's when your whole week is white,
yeah.
You're like, I'm working and doing nothing else.
Yeah.
Or if it's all orange, you're like, oh, I'm having a great week. It's just fun.
Yeah.
But it's like figuring it out, like you said, as a whole picture, because often we can, and personally, I can just be like, say yes. I love to say yes to things, to people. I love people. I'm like, yeah, sure, I can do that. I can be there.
Yeah.
I can.
And you need, yeah.
Yeah. And then suddenly you're like, there's no time left. Yeah, like all that time is accounted for. So yeah, gosh, a life coach, a manager, the PT. Yeah, this is your year, Jams.
Yeah, outsourcing. And also she makes me reflect, and that's something that I hadn't done before or done enough. She'd be like, how was last week? I'd be like, oh, no, but in my head, I only want to talk about next week.
Yeah.
But she makes me pause and be like, and I sometimes get frustrated. It doesn't matter about last week.
Yeah,
last
done.
Week was last
Fine.
Week.
Yeah.
But I know that it's an important process to talk about last week, because otherwise to me last week didn't happen. It's gone.
I need to take that. I'm taking that for myself.
Yeah.
I need to take that one. On that note, do you have a challenge for the listeners? So I ask the guests to give the listeners a power hour challenge, something they can try this week. They can let us know. And it could be for an hour. It could just be 5 minutes. But yeah, do you have a challenge for us?
Yeah. Okay. So this is what I do. Again, I'm not like always consistent with it. So I'm not selling it, right? I'm not really selling it, am I? No, I'm not really consistent with it. But every time I am consistent with it, I know it's a change in my life. And that is to write 10 things you're grateful for, your gratitude list, every single night. And I would say, try it for a month. Set yourself a 30-day challenge of every time before you go to bed, writing 10 things you're grateful for. You can write it on your phone. You can actually, I like to write it out, like actual real writing in a notebook. And it can change your like mental frame. It can open you up to opportunities, you know, because you don't have to just write. You can be grateful for things that are on their way.
Yeah,
you know, and it could be, and some people are like, oh, but you know, I got my little brother to do it when he was having some mental health problems during the summer. He was really depressed and down, and I'd get him to send me 10 things every day, and you start to see the change. Like he was like, I don't have nothing to be grateful for. I was like, well, let's just start with, you can see, you can walk, you got a roof over your head, you got food in your fridge. Just start with the real life basics, and then, you know, and then slowly you start to see that they start being thankful for other things or feelings or of other people. And you know, I think that's definitely a challenge that I'll give to you.
Yes, thank you so much. I've definitely done that in the past before, and I do it with my son as well, and it's really, really powerful.
Yeah.
So yeah, I need to get back to it as well. Awesome. And my closing question for you, Jams, I can't believe it's gone so
quick.
I know,
it's been really fun.
Really quick, really fun. But my closing question I asked every single guest on the show is about time. It's the power hour, and I believe that time is the most valuable thing that we all have. It's the most valuable thing you can give to another person. So thank you for giving us all an hour of your time.
Of course.
So what is the most valuable thing that time has taught you?
Do you know what? I think the most valuable thing that time has taught me is patience. And I was having this conversation with my other little brother last night, and I want it, and I want it right now. And I've never gotten it right now. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that time has taught me to be patient, because I don't know what people believe in. Some people believe in God, and I believe like more in the universe. But I don't think the universe doesn't give you nothing till you're ready. You know, so the time that it takes to get what you want is teaching you the patience and making you a better person, so that when it does arrive, you'll be ready for it. So if I'd have got the radio show that I wanted on One Extra when I turned up when I was 19, I probably wouldn't be sitting here. I probably still wouldn't be in the industry, or I wouldn't know who I was. You know, I would have been, you know, I wouldn't be the person that I am now. I might not be as nice as I am. I might be a mean person. You never know. And I think I'm glad that happened, and I'm glad I got it when I got it, because I got it when I was ready. So I think, yeah, time has taught me patience.
Wow. Thank you so, so much. And thank you everyone for listening. I really hope that you enjoyed this episode. If you did, then please, you can share it, you can rate, you can review on iTunes, all of that good stuff. And Jams, I almost forgot to ask you, where can we find you online?
Oh, just Jams Supernova on everything. JAMZSUPERNOVA. So I'm across all the platforms on that, even SoundCloud and things like that. And obviously you can catch me on One Extra every Tuesday night from 9 p.m. Catch me DJing maybe in a city.
Yeah. Yeah, you're nice.
Yeah, got my club nights happening. Check out my label, Future Bounce. But yeah, I'm there online.
You will find Jams. You just need to type in Jams and you'll find
yeah,
her.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, at the Supernova. Start writing the S, the U, and then it'll come
and
up.
And it comes up. Yeah. Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. See ya.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.